Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for inviting me.
It's very exciting. I think first probably we need to start with an introduction. So can you tell us your name and your specialty and what it is that you do?
Yes, my name is Verena Zehetner and I'm a specialist of equine internal medicine. And I'm working here in Austria, in Vienna and surroundings of Vienna as a mobile veterinarian and specialist.
Great. Well, I know one of the things that we hear a lot from specialists or also from residents who are in training to become specialists in the veterinary space in Europe is that the idea of going into private practice, particularly in a small private practice or on their own, is maybe even scary, like from a risk standpoint. Mm-hmm. So you have done this really successfully, and I would love to hear, first of all, what maybe words of encouragement you might have for people who aren't sure about that as an option.
Yes, I think first of all, you just have to be brave and just take a risk every now and then, because in the end, it's not a big risk. You're a specialist. If it's not working, you will get a job. Doesn't matter what happens, you will get a job anywhere in the world because you're a specialist and there are just a few of them. And in the end, if you calculate it well, like I did, so I'm, of course, I had investments. Of course, I had to go to the bank and ask for a credit. But if you calculate how much you will earn during your first years and after you have gained some reputation in your country or wherever you're working, then I think the risk is rather low that you have when thinking about money. And I think there are no other risks because it doesn't matter what happened, you can always find another job if you don't like it anymore. I think you have to be the type of person, of course, because you have to be a little bit self-organized because there's nobody else telling you anymore what to do. You have to do it by yourself. You have to keep your appointments because you don't have a secretary, at least not in the beginning, I guess. So I think you just have to be organized, prepare everything before you open your practice. I think that's a very good advice for everybody thinking about that.
So looking back maybe on where you started when you knew you wanted to become an internal medicine specialist for horses, mm-hmm. compared to what your day-to-day work looks like now, what do you find is the most motivating or the most fulfilling part of it now that maybe you didn't expect?
So I think right now as I'm working on my own and as I'm working on site at the premises where the horses are stabled, I think the most fulfilling is that I really see how the horses are kept and that I have a big impact on that. Because I can tell owners if something is not right to me or if something regards animal welfare. You don't see that under academic conditions because the horses are coming to you, or if you're working at the clinic, the horses come to you. Mm-hmm. Owners can tell you everything. They might not even lie, I don't want to say that, but they just see things maybe differently because they say, my horses turn out every day, full day, but full day means maybe 2 hours for one owner and means 24 hours for me. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I can see now directly on site and I can have an influence and tell the owner, okay, this is maybe not okay. You should try to change that, or also the stable management should be better. So I really love that because I think I have a bigger impact now than I had before.
Mm-hmm. On like the patient quality of life.
On the patient quality of life. Yeah.
So then what, since now we're comparing the present to the past, what was the thing that excited you about equine internal medicine that made you want to become a specialist in this field?
I always loved thinking about diseases, and I think that's a big part of being internal medicine specialist. You have to think a lot. Maybe it's not too much practical work, but a lot of thinking. And when I was during my internship, I always liked the weeks that I spent in internal medicine, and I very quickly knew that I wanted to become a specialist in that field. And like, especially cardiology is one of my most favorite things about internal medicine. So I really enjoy doing that. And I still love it. I still love all about internal medicine. So I think that didn't really change a lot. from the beginning.
That's fantastic to hear. I think we're lucky when we can say that. Since we're talking a lot about like your impact for the patients now, maybe you can, let's backtrack a little bit, and maybe you can tell us, there's probably no typical day for you, but an example day for you, what might that look like?
Yes, so I think there are some typical days. So I'm doing a lot of gastroscopies, I'm doing a lot of bronchoscopies, and I'm doing a lot of heart ultrasound and ECG, exercise ECG. So the typical day is around 3 to 4 patients, so max 4 patients, because I have usually a lot of travel times in between, because as you know, as a specialist, I think you have to go a little bit further to get your patients, because of course they're not all in one stable. Not everybody needs a gastroscopy. So usually I start my days around 9 in the morning, see the first 2 or 3 patients, then I take a break for about an hour, walk my dogs, and then I see maybe another 1 or 2 patients in the afternoon. And then as soon as I go back home, I will write all my reports. I will send the samples like Rachelwasches or bronchialveolar lavages of blood samples to the laboratory. And yeah, at around 5 or 6, I'm done with that, and then I have some free time. So usually I spend around 1.5 hours at each appointment or at each patient. So I take a lot of time for anamnesis. Mm-hmm. I try to make the owner feel comfortable with me. They should know that they can tell me everything about their horse, and that I will think about maybe also other diseases they might haven't thought about yet. So that's more or less a typical day for me.
Sounds really like well-structured, but also realistic in terms of stress and overload,
yeah,
which is such a big thing for us in this profession now. Was that part of your decision when you wanted to set up your practice, was taking control of your schedule and your workload?
Yes, I think that was a very big part of it, because in the end, I wouldn't consider myself like a single working lady, because I'm more like a team player. I always loved working in a team, and this is what mm-hmm. I definitely miss a lot, mm-hmm. because now I'm working on my own. But there are a lot of advantages. I have a super flexible working schedule. I don't provide emergency care because I travel a lot already, so I don't want to work during the nights. I don't work on weekends, and if I want to have a day off, I just don't make any appointments for the day. So for my lifestyle, it's perfect, because I like to travel a lot. I like to go on holidays, which now I can do without thinking about half a year in advance. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also important for like the future generation or for younger veterinarians. Try to think about your mental health, about your physical health.
Yeah.
A residency can be so stressful, and there's so much pressure on you. Always keep in mind that it's not the most important thing in your life. Mm-hmm. Work is never the most important thing in your life. To me, it's very important, but there are other important things that should also have a place in your life. And right now, everything has a place. And this is why I love my job, and I also love my private life.
Yeah, and I think this is such a critical point for our profession, because we're really taught to be always available. Mm-hmm. And as long as you know that those emergency services are available for your patients and your clients, it doesn't have to be provided by you constantly.
Definitely.
So as long as it's effectively still a team.
Yeah.
It's just in a different configuration
than
what we're used to when we're trained in an academic institution, mm-hmm. or even in a larger private practice that can offer residencies, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, I definitely see it this way. Like in Vienna, we have a lot of veterinarians, a lot of equine veterinarians that provide emergency care. So whenever somebody calls me for an emergency, like a horse owner, I tell them, okay, here are the numbers of some of my colleagues. They provide the service. Please contact them. Otherwise, we have 3 or 4 clinics really close to Vienna or directly in Vienna. So I think we offer emergency care. So I don't have to do that on my own, because I think nobody can do it on its own. You can't be on call 24/7. That's just not possible.
Yeah, it's not healthy.
It's not healthy.
We have so many struggles within the profession for mental health and burnout. that I think this is a really smart attitude to take towards establishing yourself in a sustainable business.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about sustainability from like a climate perspective or an environmental perspective, but it's so easy to lose sight of the fact that sustainability is also financial viability and economic longevity. Yeah. And the fact that if you burn yourself out in 3 years offering too many services, that's not economically sustainable either.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited that we're having this conversation because it's sometimes a little bit of an edgy conversation for people to approach. So I'm really excited about this.
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody who knows me know my point of view about that. I think we should take some pressure out of this job because everybody who becomes a veterinarian does it because of a very empathetic way, welfare to animals, loving animals. There's nobody who does it out of profit. I think no one. At least not in Austria, at least no one that I know. So these people that are becoming veterinarians do it because they deeply love animals. And it's easy to put pressure on them from the owner side of perspective, or also now social media.
Yeah.
Look at some clinics. There's just one owner who thought his dog or horse was mistreated, and they put a bad review. There's maybe a shitstorm coming out of that. So it happens quite easily. And I know, I've seen veterinarians that had mental issues, that maybe even committed suicide, unfortunately. Yeah. Also veterinarians that changed their professions, that say after some years, no, I don't want anymore. Mm-hmm. And when I knew them, they were the most motivated veterinarians. And then at a certain point, they say, I can't do this job anymore because it makes me sick.
Yeah.
And that's sad. And they all try to change that because we do want healthy veterinarians also in the next 20 years.
And it's essential in order to attract the future veterinarians because we all know, regardless of profession, that younger generations have different mindsets about how much they're willing to work and under what conditions. And it's not their fault that we didn't stand up for ourselves to have better conditions. So we can't, it's not fair to use this, it was hard for me, so it has to be hard for you.
Definitely. But that's an attitude that some people unfortunately have. And I think there's also, you have to take into consideration that the change of gender in our profession. So more females are becoming veterinarians. Maybe some of them want to have children someday. Maybe they want to take some time off. Maybe they want to work part-time as a veterinarian.
Yeah.
This is something that's really difficult here in Austria. Because you don't really get a lot of money for a part-time job. In the end, you're not really allowed during your pregnancy to work. But on the other hand, if you're an owner of a clinic or of a practice, it's hard to pay somebody that doesn't work. So I think there should be more help from the government to think about that. Because there's a change. We all see that. I think in Vienna, the university students are about 80% female.
Yeah.
So we have to keep that in mind as well, to provide better working conditions for all veterinarians, including people that want to have families and maybe want to stay a little bit longer at home with their families.
I absolutely agree. And since you bring up the gender demographics of the profession and how much they've changed, there's some interesting things that I've read in scientific publications as well that speak a little bit to some of the financial situations of the profession. So one of the things that is really current right now is that veterinarians often don't charge enough for their services. Mm-hmm. And then if you look at the demographics in the literature, there's conversations about, is it because we know that women are less likely to negotiate a higher salary? So are they also less likely to charge fully for their services? And so you're kind of a pioneer out here in a way, because you're doing practice, you're a specialist, and you're really successful. How do you approach it? What's your technique?
So I think I tried to be somewhere in between. I didn't want to be super expensive because I also want to have people, or I want people can afford my service. I don't want to just have super rich customers. I also want maybe people that are not so wealthy but want to have a gastroscopy for their pony at home that they can afford it. So I have prices that are like in the middle, I would say. I can live out of it as much as I work. But people can afford it. So, but still, I understand what you mean. I think I'm also the person, like if I had to apply at the clinic, I would be the one saying, okay, that's fine for me. I wouldn't negotiate because I think maybe I'm happy to get this job. Maybe I'm not better than others? Why should I get paid more? So you have to stand up for your right.
Yeah.
And of course, it's for me right now, it's a little bit easier because I don't really have other people doing the same as I do in my area. So I have like a monopole. Mm-hmm. So I can, in the end, charge what I want. Of course, I'm not doing it this way. I don't charge like super high prices. But I want to be, of course, more expensive than a clinic because I'm coming on site. I'm a specialist. I have all the equipment. But still, I think my prices are reasonable and affordable for people.
Is it hard to set an expectation for the level of service that you can provide as an EBVS specialist compared to, you know, there's a lot of veterinarians who have a lot of experience or maybe who have a real passion for one of the topics that you are specialized in, but there can be some competitiveness there. Mm-hmm. Is that something that is hard for you to convey the difference in value to clients, or are they pretty open to that?
Well, here I would say they're super open because there are not a lot of veterinarians offering the service I do. Mm-hmm. And all my colleagues in the end are super nice to me. So even the colleagues that offer gastroscopy, which are only a few in Austria, maybe three or four other veterinarians out there, they sometimes even send patients to me because they say, I'm not sure, maybe you can have a look at the horse. So I really try to work closely together with them and not be like concurrents, more like working in a team together. So for me, it was quite easy. And I think regarding to specialization, I think in Austria, under the horse owner, don't really know the difference between a specialist or maybe a Fachtierarzt, so somebody who gained different diplomas in a special field. So if they ask me, I try to explain them, but usually I don't have to because my patients usually get referred to me. Mm-hmm. So the house vet refers the patients to me and they already explain what I do and what I am.
Yeah.
So they say, look, this is a specialist for internal medicine. We need her now because we need this diagnostics or whatever. And then they usually are fine with that and say, okay, perfect. Because in human medicine, you also see a specialist if you have special issues.
Yeah. And I really like where you're kind of taking this conversation because it's easy to run into these sort of communication gaps. And I have always found, although I'm not in practice now, that investing time and quality into communication with the referring vets is so critical. I think that it's all part of the patient journey. Mm-hmm. And I look at it now, you know, I have a very different role in veterinary medicine now. And I wonder, how do we improve those connections and those chains of communication even more, like at a broader scale?
I know it can be difficult, of course. I think, first of all, you have to don't judge anyone. Everybody can make a mistake. Even you as a specialist can make a mistake. So, of course, I sometimes see patients that I would have treated differently. Sometimes I call the vet and say, okay, maybe the next time you can do it this way. And like my model, my business model is that I only do diagnostics. I don't give them medications. I write a treatment plan. I write a report, which will be sent to the referring veterinarians and to the owners. Mm-hmm. So they do the treatment. They give away the medication and drugs. So they also earn with me because they're earning with the medicine that they are selling to the owners, that they are giving away. So I think that's also another reason why I have a very good communication and get along with all of them quite well, because I'm not their competitor. I'm an additive, I would say. Mm-hmm. I'm additional to their practice. I bring them business and I don't take away from them. I don't take business away from them. I also don't take away business from clinics, because people that call me, most of them wouldn't have gone to a clinic. I have so many people that tell me, oh, I want to do gastroscopy for so many years, but I don't have a trailer. Mm-hmm. Or my horse doesn't like to go in a trailer. And now we're so happy that you're coming. So they wouldn't have gone to a clinic anyways.
Yeah.
But now I provide this service and they're happy that somebody do this diagnostics with their horse.
Well, and probably you also, like the referring vets are bringing you business. You're sending the business back to them.
Yes.
It's like a synergy, right?
Yeah, it is. It is a synergy. Yeah, yeah. That's maybe the best word for it. And yeah, this is why I think it's quite easy with all of them. And like before I opened my practice, there were a lot of veterinarians that already knew that I'm going to open it soon. So they were happy about it and said, "Ah, I already have cases for you." And first of all, I wrote an email to all of the veterinarians, like working in the area of Vienna, telling them that I will open up my practice and I'm very happy to work together with you. I'm happy to help you. I provide also, like, you can send me your cases or just ask questions. And I have so many vets just calling me saying, "Oh, I have a tricky case. Maybe you can look at the blood work. Tell me what you think. Tell me what you would do." Mm-hmm. So I'm really, really happy about that.
That's fantastic to hear, because I think it's so easy for us to build up these kind of images of how it's going to be really hard.
Yes.
And to hear that maybe it's not as hard as we might imagine.
Yeah.
Maybe it's more approachable than we think. I think this is fantastic news for people, especially, you know, I look at the, I hate to say it like this now, but the younger generations than me who are coming into the profession. And I think, gosh, if we could have done it differently,
yes,
for ourselves,
yeah,
knowing what we know now, and can we give them the advantage of that knowledge?
Yeah, but I think the younger generation thinks differently.
Mm-hmm.
So I have so many younger colleagues. No, but still I have so many younger colleagues that just start to open their businesses or just started 1 or 2 years ago like me. And they contact me and call me and say, "Okay, maybe we can meet. Maybe we can exchange like or share our thoughts or maybe business ideas."
Mm-hmm.
So I think the younger generation works together quite well. Mm-hmm. They're open to that. They're not as competitive as maybe the older generation.
Yeah.
So I think there's a big change, which is amazing and which is really good for everyone.
Yeah. I feel really passionate about that. I think hearing your experience in Austria, especially because Austria is one of the quite well-developed countries in terms of the number of veterinarians, the number of veterinary students, the number of veterinary specialists, mm-hmm, in this country are all very strong. It shows a strong economy, but for you to come in and establish a new business in what would be considered potentially already a high level of specialization just proves, I think, that it's absolutely possible to do it and be very successful at it.
Yeah.
If you spend a little bit of time thinking about what model will work for you and what services do you want to provide? One thing I haven't asked you, and you don't have to share this if it's too detailed, but I know a lot of people are concerned about how to figure out their pricing.
Mm-hmm.
Did you use a benchmark? Was that something that helped you decide where you wanted to land in the range of pricing?
You mean when I make the prices for my diagnostics?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So first of all, I contacted some different clinics. So, mm-hmm, I knew the prices of the veterinary university because I was working there for, right, many years. Then I asked some other veterinarians, what are their prices? What do they charge for different services? And then I made a benchmark, how much do I want to earn in 1 hour of work? And this is around at least 300 euros.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I want to. Of course, you have to pay taxes and so on.
Yeah.
And this is how try to calculate the prices. So I spent maybe 1 week doing some research on that,
mm-hmm,
and then I made some values, some numbers, and calculated a little bit more. So now I have, like, let's call it fixed prices for different diagnostics.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell the owners before the appointment how much it will be. And then they can still decide if it's too expensive or not, but I want to be quite open about that. I don't want to have, like, after the appointment, having people say, "Oh my God, she's super expensive." No, they all know beforehand,
mm-hmm,
and so that's never a problem when people pay me.
When we think about the business part of it, another thing you already even mentioned, which is so integral, I think, to business, is marketing and, mm-hmm, social media and how do you communicate that, mm-hmm, you're there? And you talked about emailing the practices and, mm-hmm, letting them know that you were going to open. What do you do now as far as advertising your business?
I think after a while I got very good reputation and people just tell each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really have to put a lot of effort in advertising my business. I would love to do more reels on Instagram because I think it can be educational and I love that. I just don't find time for that, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some projects with other vets to do some podcasts. So I've done some podcasts and we will do more. We will also do some seminars for horse owners. But otherwise, I don't really promote my business anymore. Yeah, because I'm
what a luxury.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Yeah.
So something to aim for.
Yeah.
Well done. Congrats.
Yeah, thank you.
I know, I'm sure in your residency that you had to acquire some leadership skills, and maybe they're even a little bit different now because probably you're mostly leading the referring vets and the clients.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say are leadership skills that you use often and that you think are really effective?
I think to try to understand the people. I think that's the most important thing, to be empathetic, because it doesn't matter if you're the referring vet or the horse owner. There was a reason why they reacted in the way they did, or why they treated the horse how they did.
Mm-hmm.
So be empathetic, never judge. I think that's important as a leader. And a lot of people forget about that. And yeah, otherwise, of course, have a structure. Like if you're self-employed and if you're working on your own, you have to do things or prioritize things. You can't say, oh, I will look at my emails like in a week. You have to do that every day. You have to look at your phone every day. You have to call people back every day. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have to have a structure. I think that's also important. And maybe something that's really important as a leadership skill. But yeah, I think that would be my answer.
Okay, that's amazing. Thank you. What do you think the big challenges are that are coming up for your specialty, but also for our profession in Europe?
So I think generally for our profession, it will be difficult to recruit young veterinarians. We talked about that already.
Mm-hmm.
Because due to working skills, working hours, up payment, so I think there has to be a change. For our profession, I think, or for our specialization, I think there are a lot of residents, there are still a lot of people that want to become specialists in equine internal medicine. So I think the challenge is more to keep or the education on the same level for all the residents, because
mm-hmm.
that might be hard. I think we should also provide better education or service for countries where there are no diplomats yet or no specialists yet, because the future is that you have specialists in all kind of fields. So I think there should be a better exchange. I'm not sure if like the alternative track of residency, which is provided by some colleges, is the perfect or best way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
There might be other things that we should think about. Like if you work in a field for many years, maybe there's a way that you can also get your title or specialization. So I think these are the challenges that are coming up,
mm-hmm.
because in the end, we should think globally and not like country-wise. Oh, we have a lot of residents or specialists. We don't care about the others. So at least in Europe, I think we should try to make less differences between Eastern and Western countries.
Mm-hmm. What would you say to, you know, maybe veterinary students or young veterinarians who could be interested in specializing in equine internal medicine? What would you encourage them with?
I would encourage them to focus on that, on the dream, to try to get a residency, because it's not like that you choose one. You have to give a lot to get one, I would say. And it is difficult to get one, but I would also tell them, don't be disappointed if it doesn't work out. There are other ways,
mm-hmm.
and maybe there's another time where it fits, but I would encourage them to do maybe some externships somewhere abroad, to see different clinics, different working styles,
mm-hmm.
and then just do a lot of applications and hope that it works out.
Yeah.
And maybe during the residency, yeah, also stay focused, but stay motivated. Keep yourself motivated by having a private life. I think that's the most important thing, because it can be challenging. You know mm-hmm. that, I know that.
Yeah.
But you have to keep yourself happy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not just work.
Absolutely. So would you say that it's worth it?
Yes, for me, definitely. I think it is worth it. But if I look back from now that I'm older, compared to back then when I started my residency, when I was younger, back then I had the attitude I would have done everything or anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
To get a residency, I would have given up all my life to get that chance. I wouldn't do that anymore.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't advise it to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember times where I was working so much. I was working a lot. I came back home and was reading up papers and whatever, and kind of forget about my private life, which is much more important in the end. So I would still love to do residency if I were 25 again. But I think I would also say, like, at 6 in the evening, okay, now I'll shut my books, mm-hmm. walk out that door, and enjoy the rest of the day.
Yeah, because at some point, right, it becomes just quantity over quality.
Yes.
And then it's not productive either.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, but in the end, I had a great time then. I enjoyed my time. I think Vienna is a great place for residency, because I think there are other places where it's much harder, much more work maybe. Mm-hmm. So in the end, I really had a great time during my residency.
So are there any things that you want to say about your practice or your specialty or the profession that we haven't already touched on?
Yeah, I just want to encourage other people to maybe try to open their own practice. And it works, I can tell you. If anyone's interested, they can contact me. I can maybe help you, or we can exchange experiences. So it's always nice to get in touch with other people, because to me, it helped a lot to talk to other vets before I started my business. I know that I contacted another specialist from Germany, talked to her. She has a very similar business model like I do. And that helped so much. So please just get in touch with me if you're a specialist and want to do the same. Or if you're maybe resident and think about doing something similar. Mm. I think there are so many countries where this service or this business model will work. Mm-hmm. Because it works here in Austria. We're not like a super horse country. It will work in a lot of other European countries, I think.
I think you're absolutely right. And that's such a generous offer. Thank you so much for extending that. So I think that's pretty much everything on my list. I'm sure we could talk for like 2 more hours, but I want to be respectful of your time, and I'm really appreciative for doing this. Thank you so much for joining the conversation. And it's really important to me that people are aware of and have a chance to bring their voice to the table for what I think is a very noble profession that I'm very proud to be a part of. So thank you for joining that and speaking out.
Thanks very much for having me. It was a pleasure meeting you again.